Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about a half hour, we'll talk to the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo. Trying for back-to-back winning seasons for the first time since 2014, 2015. They are technically not eliminated, but I understand. But they are technically not officially eliminated.
Do you want to know what it would take?
That's likely to happen tonight.
I have the exact circumstance it would take. Okay. Do you want to know?
Sure.
For the Royals to make the postseason.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of chuckling because I can tell you that it's a bit of a long shot. The Royals will have to go 6-0.
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers have to go 5-1.
Okay.
Because they have to beat other teams that matter. Cleveland and Houston have to go 0-6.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
All four of those teams would then finish 84-78. And in that four-team tiebreaker, the Royals would have it.
Okay.
All so, right.
Okay.
No big deal.
Uh-huh. Anyway.
You heard it there. Just Royals go 6-0. Texas goes 5-1. Cleveland and Houston go 0-6. Problem solved.
All right.
Playoff team.
There you go. Sounds so simple. So easy.
When you put it.
But Carter Jensen with J.J. Piccolo coming up in just a bit. You guys can interact with us on the Jay Southland Toast Service. Text line 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running. YouTube, Twitch, X, Facebook. Make sure you like, subscribe to the station on there so you don't miss any of the shows. It'll make it easy on YouTube. It'll be right at the top of your YouTube page or the app if you're using the YouTube app. As well, we're also expected to have four-time All-Pro, former NFL wide receiver Steve Smith join us in about an hour. Good person to talk to this week, given the state of the offense, given Tyquan Thornton's emergence, given Xavier Worthy maybe coming back this week against the Baltimore Ravens. So a lot to get into with him as well. Plus Nate Taylor in the 1 o'clock hour. So fun show ahead. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us on a rainy Tuesday in Kansas City. But I want to start with last night because it certainly impacts this Sunday, and that's what we all watched.
And a couple Sundays from now.
Yeah, the Ravens, who they're going to play Sunday, the Lions, who they're going to play in a couple of weeks, and a Ravens team now, much like the Chiefs, they're going to go into Sunday, and one of those teams is going to be 1-3 after a loss. That's wild to think about. None of us would have predicted that before the season. I don't think anybody, if you're being honest with yourself, anybody would have thought one of these teams heading into week four at that point in time will be 1-3.
No, that's the opposite of what I would have assumed the season would have gone. No, look, we didn't have any, once we knew the Rashee Rice suspension was going down, we didn't have some delusions of grandeur here in Kansas City Gold thinking that the Chiefs were going to be 5-1 through six games with no Rashee Rice. And certainly after Worthy got hurt, 5-1 with no Xavier Worthy and no Rashee Rice. But I certainly didn't think they were staring down the barrel of 1-3 through 4 weeks. And I especially didn't think that both of those teams would be looking at the possibility of 1-3. This goes back to a little bit of what I said yesterday, which was I was kind of hoping the Ravens would win because I didn't want them staring that down or facing that reality the same way the Chiefs are, because next Sunday at 3:25, you are probably going to look at a game that has the two hungriest teams in all of the NFL doing battle against each other. There are no two teams, more desperate at the same time going up against each other than Chiefs and Ravens. I don't care if it's 2-0-3 teams. Those teams stink, and no, they stink. That's a very different circumstance. This was what was supposed to be the best roster in the NFL versus the three-time-in-a-row appearing Super Bowl team with back-to-back a couple of years ago at 1-3? Like, that's a completely different vibe. The other part that that stood out about this game, as we talk about where this game is boy, I hope that they're at a place to take advantage of the Ravens' bad defense. Because the Ravens' defense is really why. If we're saying, why are these teams 1-2? For the Chiefs, it's because they can't score. And for the Ravens, it's because they can't stop anyone from scoring.
Yeah, this is a Ravens team that has given up more points than any other football team this year. The Ravens have given up 97. The Dolphins right there at 97, the Titans 94, the Bears 93, the Jets 93. There's a couple of those teams you expect to struggle, expect to be poor defenses. I get it. You'll point to they've played the Lions and the Bills, two of the better offenses in football, and there's some truth to that. However,
still getting a 40 a game in those games. You can't do that.
That's still at that level, obviously not something that's sustainable, and it's why you sit at the record you sit. I think as we'll later on in the week discuss the individual matchup kind of stuff between the Chiefs and the Ravens, you know, from the early view of this game on Sunday, I still think the Chiefs are going to have to win in a lower scoring game. So while we talk about the Ravens defense being a problem, the good news probably for the Ravens as well is they're looking at the Chiefs offense and saying, well, we're not really all that concerned about them. And so is this going to be on Sunday a game where it's kind of similar to what we saw with the Giants, not in terms of hopefully the first half, but is it a 24-21, mm-hmm. a 21-17, a 21-20? Are we really going to see a 38-35 game? I just don't think the Chiefs offense is capable of that right now. I think the Chiefs defense is also much better than that to allow it to become a 38-35 type of game. So this is going to be truly like the cliche dogfight on Sunday between the Chiefs and the Ravens. You know, yeah, I mean, you know what's weird though about the offense for the Chiefs, and as we're talking about the Ravens defense, despite all the issues of the Chiefs offense, and they look dreadful, and we all know the story about the offense, they're still sixth in points per drive this year in the NFL. And seventh
every drive is a slog. It takes forever, but yes.
But there's somehow they're still sixth in points per drive, and it's not like they're turning the ball over.
No, it is because this is how they were. Like, by the way, this is exactly how they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
They were technically efficient in the amount they scored, as in how often they scored, but the same problem implies, which is, every drive, and this might be, I'm not word for word of what I sent out on Sunday. Every drive is 47 plays for 19 yards and a field goal. So, like, when you do that, every drive gets points, but it isn't easy. Look, the Chiefs defense is very good. This will be the toughest challenge they've had so far this year, offensively, because I do think that the way Derrick Henry, even though he has a real fumbling problem right now, and Lamar Jackson work and all this other stuff, it's going to be a real challenge, which is why I think their defense can keep them in the low 20s because of how good they've played. But the Chiefs offense, more importantly, is going to have to find a way to take advantage of the Ravens, who are just letting anyone run all over them. I know that they had a good game against the Browns, who might be the worst offense in football. So kudos, I guess.
I will be interested to see if they get Matabuke back. They had some other injuries. Is that enough to solve it there for the Ravens? Because they were without a few players last night.
Will the Chiefs get Worthy back?
Exactly.
As another person who can take advantage of the Ravens defense?
My guess is both teams are going to have their guys back and ready for Sunday, given that these are teams that are 1-2. I just think we know what's at stake for both. I mean, the Ravens, the record is one thing, but also for the Ravens, if they lose, not only are they 1-3, they would have already lost games to the Chiefs and Bills. So the tiebreakers in terms of if they happen to be a division winner still and they need seeding, that's out the window completely for the Ravens. Obviously, the Chiefs fall to 1-3. I think the division conversation is just about over.
They might. Yeah. Honestly, if they lose the division, if they lose on Sunday and the Chargers win, the Chargers are winning the division, right? I mean, I don't know any other way to put it. They can only make up one of the three games they would be behind. And by the way, the Chargers don't have a tough game. They have the exact same game the Chiefs just played. They have the Giants on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw what that Giants team looks like. Maybe it's a slight challenge if they actually pull the trigger and Jackson Dart gets in the game. He did leave that open yesterday, Dable. He said we're exploring all options.
That told me that he's probably going to start.
Most likely. I wouldn't rule that out, certainly, on that end. But you had pointed out something before the show, which is so interesting about these teams, is the national perception on these two teams is dramatically different on the Chiefs and the Ravens.
Absolutely.
People are talking about the Chiefs like they are just shoveling dirt on their face, and this is a dead team, not worthy of discussion. And the Ravens are being discussed like aw, shucksy. Look how good that offense is. I can't believe they're 1-2. Warren Sharp had put out the stat, right? For instance, Warren Sharp had said the Ravens have scored 100 and I think it's 3 points in their first 104 points in the first three games. The only team since 2000 to have scored 100 plus points through 3 weeks and have a losing record ever. But the other 25 teams with 100 plus through 3 weeks are 68-7. They win 91% of their games. So it's like, oh, if it just this offense, they're going to win. versus they both have one massive problem.
Correct. I think, but that's how as sports fans and in the NFL in particular, it goes back to everybody likes points. Everybody likes scoring and all that. And so if you have one team that's struggling on the offensive side of the ball, it seems far worse. It does because the NFL is a passing league. It's a high scoring league. We all love fantasy football and everybody bets overs and all that because points are fun. It's what we all want to see. So when your team struggles to score the football and move the ball, that is going to make it seem far worse than if your team is good at defense. It's just I think it's just the nature of how we consume the product. So I think that's what's going into some of this, where the Ravens defense has been abysmal. Offensively, they're still fun. Lamar looks great still. Derrick Henry's got a fumbling problem all of a sudden, but otherwise he's been good. I don't know what's up with him. He keeps fumbling the football in crucial moments. That's twice now, but I think three fumbles already on the season. I think that's the reason why we have people talking about the Ravens. Like, okay, they're 1-2, but nobody's really worried about them. The Chiefs are 1-2, and everybody is saying the world is ending for them. Some of it is also the Super Bowl performance, no doubt, the carryover from last year. We all saw what happened there, and that's what people are basing on. But I do think it's interesting how everybody is talking about the Chiefs compared to the Ravens. And heck, I've seen it even from Chiefs fans, and you guys tell me on the text line. I think Chiefs fans watched the Ravens last night and are very, very concerned. And I'm not saying that guaranteeing any victory or something on Sunday. I think it's going to be a very, very close game, and the Chiefs are going to have to play much better to win it. But I also think if I was in Baltimore doing radio there, I would say, well, the Ravens got to play a hell of a lot better too. Whereas nationally, I feel like people are just saying, oh, well, the Ravens will score a bunch and the Chiefs won't, and it's just going to be over. Yeah, and I just don't think that's how this game is going on Sunday.
You would rather have a team like the Chiefs that has a better defense, in my mind, because I think based on what
you're probably basing that off of your Bengals experience
I would feel better going into this game if I was a Chiefs fan, I think, just because of the Ravens nearly allowing 41 and then 38 points to solid offenses, where if you get Xavier Worthy back, that secondary has been a mess since last season has been. So if you can get one of your horses back, why can't you score 27 points against this defense? And is 27 enough to win with your defense and how it's playing? Probably. So if I was a Chiefs fan, I would feel great, or I'd feel better going into this game based on what I've seen from the Ravens defense, because you know Spags is going to have a plan, and you know that everything defensively, I don't think the Ravens are going to score more than 27 points against the Chiefs. I don't think that's going to happen.
So the weird thing will be, and I agree with you, Spags has always had pretty good plans against Lamar. Last night, though, and I don't know if this goes back to Cody's theory yesterday, where he was like, you said you didn't want the Ravens to lose because you were worried like they would
I didn't want them to be this desperate.
Okay. And then last night, not necessarily the result of the game, but the way it played out, my question would be, what adjustment do the Ravens make? Lamar was sacked 7 times by the Lions. So they have Aiden Hutchinson, obviously, who's a stud, and he looks healthy and great. But we don't see Lamar get sacked that often. I think that was the second time in his career. Somebody put out the stat last night. Second time in his career, gets sacked 6 or more times. He got sacked 7 times. I think it ties a career high. Spags will have all these blitzes, but the Chiefs aren't sacking him 6 or 7 times in this game on Sunday. My point is that did the Lions already expose something that they're going to clean up, or did the Lions expose something that, oh, the Chiefs are also going to be able to expose as well?
Look, I thought the Chargers they won, but like that was their biggest issue in week 3 too. They finally felt the note team, you finally noticed that they were missing their left tackle against Denver. They were all over Justin Herbert. Hell, that throw he made to win the game against Denver, that was the best throw of the entire NFL season.
It was great.
From any quarterback on any team, that was legitimately the best throw any quarterback has made all year. And so, like, it still took, like, a superhuman effort. But you and I know that you can't make throws like that or plays like that forever. And so, like, I think Lamar ran into, and look, they might very well be. The text line said, they're starting to look like the 2024 Bengals. The truth is, if they lose to the Chiefs this week and it's 30-27 and somehow they let the Chiefs get to 30, despite the fact they scored 30, I don't know, all but twice maybe last year, and certainly haven't been risking that at any point this season, then they are going to feel like last year's. They are going to feel like last year's Bengals team, where you're like, how are we 1-4 with all of these weapons and all of these points? Because Zay Flowers has had a great time. They're going to run into a thing. This is, nationally, a lot of people are going to choose the Ravens simply for the reason you mentioned. They're going to do it because that offense looks legit. And they're going to say this team can score and Derrick Henry won't fumble in the fourth quarter this time. Because the truth is the Ravens could be 3-0.
That's crazy.
If they weren't giving the ball away in the fourth quarter.
He's fumbled in every single game so far.
And in the fourth quarter. Like, he's giving it away at the worst conceivable time,
right? Yeah, it's nuts. Because I don't know if that's just because we've come to know Derrick Henry as just this
Reliable?
Reliable guy that is going to consistently give you 100 yards a game, always is going to score touchdowns, where he's kind of lost, like the Bills game, that's a loss on Derrick Henry single-handedly. Like the one last night, I don't think you can say it, but the Bills game, they lost because he fumbled the football.
Yeah, it's weird how I think you, as fans, we all try to like look at his situation. I mentioned the sack thing, but now Derrick Henry has had a fumbling problem. On one hand, you say, oh, wow, now he's going to fumble against Kansas City. They're going to take advantage of it. On the other hand, you're like, damn it, he's now gonna there's no way he's fumbling on Sunday now.
Like, you know, like the whole time.
That's the problem though. You know, it depends on how you want to like talk
spin
yourself.
It in your head.
Yeah, but there's I get the reasoning on some of that kind of stuff. We
Meanwhile,
all do it.
Like very brief, and I know that we're not going to spend a ton of time with them. They're not this opponent. Don't love having to face the Lions in a couple weeks.
I'll worry about that then. Their offense is back.
Week one,
clearly the Packers defense was just very, very good. They're good. The Lions are perfectly fine. I think any worries about their offense are done now.
And that's all the more reason for the Chiefs to get this one.
Yeah, then get the Jags, and then you either win and you're 4-2 and everything is solved, or because if you win this one and you're 2-2, you're okay. You beat the Jags, the team we expect. Then you get to go into that Lions game. You're like, well, 3-3 through six. Here comes Rashee Rice. I'll take my losses and just move on with my life. Or you somehow shock the world and get wins against both of those teams. You're 4-2, and now everyone's going to talk about you having a chance to be the best team in the AFC again. And so, like, you can shift your narrative a lot over the next couple of weeks.
Sunday's game is a narrative shifter. There's no doubt. I mean,
yes.
no question for both organizations. It's a narrative shifter, and potentially what will set up how the rest of the year is going. That's how big of a game I think Sunday is. Like, I know you'll say, there's still, going to be months and months of football. But Sunday's game, to me, truly could take you down a different path for how the season's going to play out for each of these franchises. We'll have all week to talk about it. We'll talk about it with Nate Taylor a little bit later on in the show. One other thing, though, through the first 3 weeks that has been different for this offense, even different than last year. Like, we've talked about the struggles of how similar it is. There's one thing that is different than even a year ago for Patrick Mahomes in this offense, and it depends on how you want to look at it. On one hand, you say this is an O-line problem. On the other hand, you say this is proof that Mahomes, once again, is adapting and adjusting. And I'm talking about right now Mahomes is throwing the ball quicker than he ever has. He has the fastest average time to throw in the NFL this year. And they're, as I said, still somehow sixth in points per drive, seventh in EPA per play with all the struggles, with no run game, all of that. So on one hand, you say, wow, that Mahomes is ridiculous. The fact that he's doing this now, and that's not something he's ever done in his career. On the other hand, you say, well, this once again shows that receivers are not getting open down the field. They're having to do a bunch of quick passes, or he's scrambling. A lot of this, I think, is skewed by what happened the first 2 weeks and when he was running the football. And so that's what, because of that, it led him to run the ball more. Because he was running, it led him to, when he, get happy feet, if you will, as well. So there's different ways you can look at it. Do you think this is a stat that has to change, or is this something that's sustainable? Because I don't think it's sustainable.
Has to change. I'm 100% with you. It can be fine for the next 3 weeks. If this is how you want to live your life until Rashee Rice is back, fine. But if part of the reason, we know really twofold for why teams typically throw the ball fast, or three, but one of them absolutely does not apply to the Chiefs. The third one is you have elite level speed and you like getting in their hands so they can make tackles, miss tackles. Well, that's not it. So we can just move past. That's why he's throwing the ball so fast. They're not running some run and gun offense and trying to just get their guys in space. Their guys are slow. So not that. The other two options are bad offensive line or bad weapons. Honestly, it's probably a little bit of both. Yeah. The offensive line has not played well enough and the weapons certainly have not been good enough. But if the offensive line is part of the issue, well, I already told you, you have an option to start improving that right away. His name is Jalen Moore. He can start over Jawan Taylor tomorrow. So, like, we can already start improving that area of the field immediately. Plus, I think Simmons, Smith, and Creed will all play better with time. And honestly, I've not been that disappointed in Kingsley. Has he been a perfect player?
He's coming off his best game as a pro, in my opinion. I believe that. I really believe that this past game was his best game as a pro. Doesn't mean that he didn't get beat. Doesn't mean he didn't make mistakes. But I think we actually saw his best game as an NFL player.
I agree. And so, like, if we're going to show improvement, and there's one guy, so we can improve that. And the wide receivers should naturally improve. So there should be some space for it. Once everyone's back, no more you're the fastest team in the NFL to throw the football. Patrick Mahomes needs time and space to create. He is at his best, Gold, when he creates and makes something out of nothing. If he throws it this fast, there's no creation. You've taken that element of his game away in a lot of ways.
This will be one I want to revisit in like 3 or 4 weeks. You know,
is that still the case?
Is it? And if it is, what is it? Is it looking any different, or is it the same issues? Because you would think when Rice and Worthy are on the field that the time to throw will settle in a little bit, not just because the offensive line might also as well, but because you're going to have some guys getting open a little bit quicker. You're going to think they're going to get open quicker. I know you're saying, well, that'll lead to a faster throw, but not necessarily. Like, you might be able to trust the fact that some deeper routes are going to develop.
Yeah, and I just like some of this is just offensive line play. And I'll give them credit. I've asked a question this year, which was, I think the offense looks too similar to last year's offense. And you had said, you know, that's probably because they're in a similar spot. And I was like, but they had all last year to try to work out something creative to make this work. And maybe there is no pill, right? There is no solution. There's no way to work up the offense that allows these weapons to work until they have everybody at play. This at least is an adjustment. Andy Reid made an adjustment. Patrick Mahomes has made an adjustment. He said, if we don't have the time right now and we can't run a normal offense until we get these guys back, we are going to have you drop back 3 steps and you're going to get rid of the ball fast. It's also why they had to fail a fourth down in the second game where they completed 3 passes for all of 9 yards and still didn't get the fourth, right? That leads to problems, and it leads to what you're saying in the points per drive thing from the previous conversation, which is it makes mistakes be amplified. Juwan Taylor's mistakes are amplified gold if every yard you get, every play you get is for 3 yards. Every pass you throw is for 4 yards. It amplifies the problems, doesn't it?
Well, no, it has.
Yeah, because you get to, they do what they did the last 2 years, Cody, where they get to 3rd and 3 and they're content with getting to 3rd and 3 because they've always been able to convert those. And then you have a holding penalty or a false start.
And then
it's all of a sudden 3rd and 8 yeah. and you don't have the time or the scheme or the wide receivers to be able to trust that they can have the depth of target deep enough to get a first down.
It's a problem. We'll see whether or not they can adjust on it. But like, I don't think that. If that's the stat by the end of the year, this offense never got fixed.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that. Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll talk to the general manager of the Kansas City Royals about the final week here of the baseball season. They are out west late baseball games tonight here on 96.5 The Fan, or the rest of the week, I should say, as they're taking on the Angels and the Athletics throughout the week. 8:38 first pitch tonight there on the West Coast for the Royals and the Angels. One other thing as we're talking about the offense, this is one of those numbers that I don't really think matters that much because yardage is not what you should be basing your offense on. Like, nobody says, oh, they have the most yards in football. You go off of points per game. But if you're wondering, you're watching these offenses across the entire league. Steve Palazzolo had put out the numbers, but offenses are averaging 317.9 yards a game. That's actually the lowest since 2005, the third lowest total this century. So those are pretty staggering numbers.
Also, everyone's offense stinks is what you're telling me.
Yardage-wise. And you're like, well, doesn't yards mean points? There's some correlation, but in general, the kickoffs has contributed to this. I mean, last night we saw twice towards the end of the game in the Lions-Ravens game, kicks out of bounds. One was short of the landing zone, and so the drive started at the 40. Well, obviously, there's 80 yards of offense that you eliminated for both teams, you know, between the two teams or whatever in last night's game. So I do think kickoffs are playing a role. I also think this past weekend played a role. If you're going to have, you know, some of these possessions switch the way they did due to some of the blocked field goals and things like that, that alters it. I just don't really care about the yardage numbers. It's always a points per game thing. Defensively, I don't care how many yards you give up. I definitely think offensive yards matter more than defensive yards given up if you're ranking. But at the end of the year, I don't think we're going to say, man, the Chiefs were the 14th best offense in yards per game, but offensively they scored whatever and they were ninth. Nobody's going to say they were the 14th best offense. You're going to say they were the ninth best offense.
For what it's worth, I think there's just a clear class separation in offenses in the NFL right now. Baltimore, Indianapolis, Detroit, and Buffalo are all scoring. Scoring in bunches, scoring a lot, having no issue putting points on the board. The other offenses that you would think are 5 through 10, none of those you've been overwhelmed with. Seattle, Minnesota, Washington, Philly, Chicago, Dallas. Like, I'm not saying they haven't done things good on offense, but I'm certainly not blown away in a way where I'm like, wow, Look at them go.
Well, they probably got a bulk of that Sunday. The Seattle Seahawks did when they dropped 44 points.
I would love absolutely. We can look this up. I'd love
and
to know.
Washington got a bulk on Cincinnati this week, getting 48.
I would love to know what the average starting heading into this week. It was the average starting position was 29.5 yard line. I would love to know where it's at after 3 weeks, because I do think this is largely because of the kickoff.
You said that was through 2 weeks?
Through 2 weeks. So did that go up this week? I'd have to go back, and there was definitely some kickoff return for touchdowns this week, but I don't know.
I wonder if it would go down just because of the blocked field goals, like you were saying. Because there were so many of those in short fields and turnovers as well. Somebody mentions going for it on fourth down way more. I think it does seem like more teams are going for it, if you get to the 50,
they're saying
that
they're saying setting up shorter fields because you miss a fourth down as well, and then the other team takes over at your own 40.
I mean, it is way the kick returns are way up.
That's the biggest contributing
factor. Starting
field
position from last year, it's the same. 29.6 last year, 29.5 this year. So it's not like there's no difference. Now, from 2023, when it was 25.1, they've added 5 yards. And I told you this before. The difference between starting at the 25 or the 30 is a difference of 3 points per game in the NFL. So they've increased scoring, just on average. That's how it's going to go.
Up next, let's talk a little Royals baseball with the general manager and executive vice president of baseball ops, J.J. Piccolo. We'll ask him about the club trying to go back-to-back winning seasons for the first time since 2014 and 2015. And looking ahead to the future a little bit, a couple decisions to make this offseason.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in about a half hour, we'll talk to former NFL wide receiver, a four-time All-Pro, Steve Smith, get his perspective on this Chiefs offense right now. Also, Xavier Worthy, what he could bring to the offense again if he gets back with this team on Sunday when the Ravens come to town. So we'll get a good perspective on the start of the NFL season with Steve Smith coming up in just a little bit. But let's talk some Royals baseball with the general manager and executive vice president of baseball operations, J.J. Piccolo. He joins us every couple weeks here on Cody and Gold. Good morning. I know it's early out west for you guys on this road trip. I know the ultimate goal was to win the division, get to the postseason, but trying to have back-to-back winning seasons for the first time since 2014, 2015, what would that mean for you guys as an organization as well?
It would be huge for us. I mean, that's one of our goals is sustainability, and part of being sustainable and a good team is having winning records year after year. So we're looking at these six games like they're big, big games for us. And of course, we're not completely eliminated just yet. You know, we got to win six in a row, and a couple teams got to lose six in a row. Yeah. So it's a tall order, but all we can control is what we do here on out. So these next six games are very important to us.
Have you been happy to
establish some history?
I was about to say, have you been happy to see some of the fight? Because like it was easy enough. You go through the losing streak. It seems like it kind of plays you out of the playoffs. You know, you can sense that. But they fought back to 500 and to stay above 500 or around there. Do you like seeing that out of a team, even knowing that the playoffs were a long shot?
Without a doubt. We had a couple games last week, and I thought we could have easily shut it down and not competed, but one game we're up 3-0 against Seattle and we end up winning the game late. That was a good game. Even the game we lost on Sunday, I thought we competed really well. We didn't score more runs than the other team, but that was a good baseball game, and that's what we want to do. That's what we want to establish as an organization. But we're proud of the way they're competing, and we expect them to go out these next six games and do the very same thing.
Just briefly speaking of other playoff teams, because you're the general manager of another team, I'm guessing you're not allowed to text Freddie for me and congrats on helping send the Padres to the playoffs. Did you get a chance to see that moment last night?
I did see it. I was watching the game when it happened. Couldn't be happier for Freddie. He's a Royal through and through. I know he's in a different uniform right now, but happy for Freddie. He's going to get a chance to experience the playoffs for a second year in a row, and you know, wish him nothing but the best.
We're talking to J.J. Piccolo here on 96.5 The Fan. Last week, Cole Reagan's return to the rotation. He'll also start tonight. What did you make of that first start back? And are there any sort of limitations still, you know, tonight in terms of workload for him?
We'll still be careful with him. You know, he's probably going to throw a few more pitches tonight than he did the other night. But, you know, you can't help but to think, especially that first inning, like what could have been had, had Cole been healthy all year. You know, that's a natural thought. But it was a good sign of what our pitching staff is like and what it could be. And, you know, Cole, with the year he had last year, what he was doing this year until the injury, you know, is a big part of who we are, you know. And going back to your, one of your first questions there about how we've competed extremely well without, you know, one of our top starters and one of the top pitchers in baseball. So seeing him out there last week was a great moment for him. You know, the, mentally, the perseverance players go through when they're injured, it's difficult. So I know it was a big relief for Cole to get out there and throw the ball the way he did and dominate, really, that first inning, you know, as well as you possibly could. I think it was 9 swings and misses in an inning. You don't see that. So that's how good Cole really is.
When it comes to, I want to ask you about Cags too, obviously, as he's had his second run here as a big leaguer post the injury. Carter Jensen, obviously everything he was doing in the minors, he's doing now in the bigs. He's hitting for average. He's showing some power. His on-base percentage has been excellent. Is he the kind of guy, just for like looking into the future, you've tinkered with him at the top of the order. Because of his on-base percentage, is he going to be tempting to be a top of the order guy for you next year?
Well, I think we got to let that play out. And the circumstance the other day was, you know, Isbell's hurt. Yeah, he played a bunch of games in a row, and we're looking at, you know, we wanted a left-handed hitter at the top of the lineup. Carter's not hit leadoff in the minor leagues, but for where we are in the season, trying to get him some at-bats, and play, hey, why not? You know, he's taking great at-bats. The quality that Carter has, or the talent that he has and the skill that he has, is pitch recognition. He makes good swing decisions. He's going to walk. You know, I think one of the, aside from the hits, the best thing we're seeing right now is he's not changing his approach in the major leagues. He's making pitchers work to get him out. It's a very good sign of a quality hitter. And Carter obviously has the power too. You don't see a guy go foul pole to foul pole and hit two homers in a game all that often. It's Hoffman Stadium. And then you look at the game where he hits 3 doubles all through the left center field gap with another ball against the wall. Like that is the sign of a really good approach and somebody that's going to be a quality major league hitter.
These things are obviously related. How close are you guys to picking up the option for Salvador Perez? And is that a conversation you've already had with him this offseason, knowing that $13.5 million is on your side?
Well, I think it's safe to say that Salvi's going to be back in a Kansas City Royals uniform. You know, we haven't had discussions about when we'll pick up the option or what we're going to do. There are things that we're going to, you know, through this week, have discussions with Salvi. His desires, obviously, is to be here and be a Royal the rest of his career. But there are things we'll figure out through the offseason. But I think it's safe to say that Salvi is going to be in Kansas City next year.
Yeah, obviously, you do have the offseason to figure some things out. Do you right now, when you look at how maybe you approach even just the catcher position, knowing we already talked about Freddie no longer being part of the organization, now seeing how Carter Jensen is being used, we know Salvi wants to be behind the dish. How much does that also go into some of the thought process as you look ahead to the offseason?
Well, there's ongoing conversations with Salvi. I mean, it's happened the last several years about his workload and how much he can catch. Now, when we traded Freddie, we had to up his workload. That wasn't part of the plan. He caught far more games after we traded Freddie than prior to trading Freddie. But now that we have Carter and he's gotten some experience behind the plate in the major leagues, you know, probably looking at a very similar situation as we had with Freddie, and now we'll just substitute Carter for him.
Would your thought be going into the offseason that Jack Caglione would be, our plan is starting right field 2025. That's where you're trying to pencil him in?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Is your plan to make sure that, like, to spend the offseason making sure that Jack Caglione is your starting right fielder?
Well, we'll do everything we can. I mean, somebody's, you know, players got to go out and earn those opportunities. But, you know, we expect that Jack's going to be a big part of what we do in 2026. If you think about what he's done this year to come from, you know, double A to triple A to the big leagues, and he had the injury. That's an awful lot. And then throw in a position change for him. You know, just proud of the way he's continued to compete. We know that the season didn't go exactly the way we wanted it to go in the major leagues, but he's a young major league player, and we're going to be patient with him. He's going to have to earn a spot on the team opening day next year. But we know that he's a talented guy, and he's going to figure this thing out. It's just a matter of when.
Last two players I'm going to ask about, because you guys have obviously made a lot of trades for pitchers, so you'll have a lot of decisions and maneuvering there. But every offseason, I got to ask, what's the likelihood that you guys will try to work on extensions for guys like Mikel Garcia and Vinny Pasquantino this year?
Yeah, they're things to be determined as well. I mean, it's always an ongoing process for us. What's best for the organization? How do we manage our payroll? Who are the guys that we know we need that are everyday players? The two you just mentioned are obviously very valuable. I think, you know, probably 65 to 70% of our offense came from those two, and Bobby and Salvi. You know, they were the key contributors, so they're important to us and then what our success is going to look like next year. But they are under contract, so there's things that we need to work through. We know they'll be in our uniform. It's just a matter of whether or not we choose to work an extension or if they even want an extension. So you got to work through those things in the coming months.
J.J. Pecola, Royals General Manager, Executive Vice President of Baseball Ops. We appreciate you coming on throughout the season. I'm sure we'll have you on at some point in the offseason as well.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you.
Absolutely. There you go. J.J. Pecola with us here on 96.5 The Fan. There is a ton of things that I think we all want to get answers to during the offseason as well. You know, the most notable, and I don't think we're surprised to hear it, as far as Salvador Perez and his future in Kansas City. He will be on this team next year. I think we assumed that, but obviously it's nice to hear directly from the general manager of the Kansas City Royals. And then also, you know, just moving into 2025, you know, he mentioned that the Freddie Fermin trade, of course, changed some things a little bit, but kind of envision Carter Jensen playing as much as Freddie did last year in support of Salvador Perez, kind of how Freddie did this year, but that'll be Carter Jensen in 2026.
I mean, good, because I am curious, because Carter Jensen, the way he's hitting right now, that's an everyday player. And you can't fumble around like you have before. Like, you can't just put him at DH. You can't just put him at first base. You can't just teach him right field. You're already doing that. Vinny already needs time at first base. They need those extra DH spots for the days that Salvi or whatever, right? The maneuverability of player out of position is in, let's teach Carter first base, which they wouldn't normally do for him, but, or let's just have him DH more often. It's more limited based on the current roster construction they have. And that doesn't include if they tried to go get an offseason bat who might also need. This is part of the problem. They're limited in the offseason bat camp. As much as I would love Kyle Schwarber to be the guy that they signed.
There's not a ton of free agent options either.
The room on him, and I'd find a way to make the room if I were the Royals, but like the room doesn't really fit. The pieces don't fit in order in a logical sense. And for Carter Jensen to get the number of at-bats we think he should get, that creates a whole nother thing. I did look it up, by the way. Cags, since being recalled from the injury, .216 batting average, .344 on base, .736 OPS, 2 homers, 8 RBI, and 9 walks. He has certainly been better than before the injury, but he's still like, there's room for improvement if that
makes
sense.
A lot of it will be determined too in terms of, you know, during spring training, of course, but also what are they able to accomplish, if anything, in potential trade market in the outfield? And how does that shift their thinking with some of these younger players as well? And does one trade lead them down a different path for another move? It sets up another, you know, some of it, you may go in and this is your plan to go do this, but it just doesn't happen, right? And then all of a sudden you've got to pivot, right? That played out last year. We saw that. And unfortunately, we saw the result of that. And the mess in the left field and right field for 99% of this season, really. So, you know, it'll be an interesting offseason for them. But for the most part, I think we all agree the roster is going to be very, very similar. Very similar. As far as extensions, you asked him about, you know, Vinny and Mikel in particular. That'll be fascinating to me because you and I have gone back and forth on this for the last probably year and a half. Whether it's Vinny, whether it's Mikel. Obviously, Mikel's coming off a career year.
Yep.
Vinny made it through a full, healthy season. Huge for him. And your confidence and faith moving forward if you were to go down the contract extension route. But as I told you, and it's just the reality of baseball, they don't have to do anything this offseason with either. They could just roll the arbitration game out there. I mean,
they've got multiple years.
Obviously, you know, and each player has their own priorities, but you know, sure, you want the long-term security in terms of a nice contract if you're Vinny or Mikel or whatever. But also, if you're the Royals, You got three or four more years of control.
I know, and you don't have to make those moves. And that's where the end of that sentence is probably the most important. They also have to want an extension. As in, they want to have to give up a year or two of free agency in order to lock up a certain amount of financial security for themselves moving forward. Look, every No, I was going to say, there's 15 teams in the Major League Baseball who have a hitter like Vinny Pasquantino, but every contender needs a hitter like Vinny Pasquantino. And so, like, 30 home runs, 100 RBI, you need a guy like that in your lineup.
And each player is different, of course, not only just their own circumstance in life and everything, but also their age here. We're talking about Vinny, who's 27 already, and Mikel, who's 25. I don't know when they turn 26 or 28, but yeah. Vinny's 27. Mikel, as of right this second, is 25. So it's also a different circumstance for each one of them in that regard. It's one thing if you're a player and you know that you'll be under 30 when you have an opportunity versus you'll be 30 or 31 when you have an opportunity. So who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if one of them possibly has something worked on this offseason in terms of a contract, but I totally if there's part of me that would say I would just continue to roll it out there if I was the organization, and you don't need to give out an extension.
Look, this is where baseball gets you. Vinny won't even like really get an arbitration raise.
No, I think he'll get a nice off-season little bump though.
No, but like there's still a limit. They cap the amount per year that you can get in an arbitration age. They still can control Mikel Garcia for four full seasons after this. And I think the same with Vinny. And so it's like, yeah, they don't have to do anything. For the Royals, it's just, do you think these players are going to be good 5 years from now? Difficult question to ask. But do you think they're going to be 5 years from now? I think that that's a safe question at this point for me, that I think both of these guys will still be on major league rosters, deserving to be on major league rosters 5 years from now. And it's, are they willing to give up some of those years? They don't got 3 years left of any after this. So 3 years of arbitration, rather they got to negotiate every year rather than fight it and give them the raise that way, pay them out, buy up years 31, 32, 33. You get, if you do a 6-year deal that includes the 3 years of arbitration, 5-year deal, you get a huge chunk of this man's career, and when he's expected to be a major hitter, then you can make a decision at 32.
Look, it's not, as we always say with Vern's, like, not my money, so like, whatever,
yeah,
right?
No, I know.
So sure, yeah, fine. It's not my money that I'm risking when he's 32 or 33 years old that I'm paying a 33-year-old.
That's still like on the younger end. That's not like when they pay a free agent a 10-year deal at 30.
I think the fact that he made it through healthy is huge. Yeah, made it through healthy is huge in this whole entire, scenario. It's when you're buying out arbitration on a superstar like Bobby Wood Jr., okay, I totally get the cost reason why you would want to get it done, because it's already a deal that now looks great because of what Bobby has done, meaning it would cost you way more to wait. Is it going to cost you way more, though, if you wait on Vinny or Mikel? And I'm not so sure it really is.
No.
And that's
honestly
the difference,
they saved
you know?
A ton of money on Bobby Wood Jr.
Yeah, of course.
They might have saved $150 million, $200 million. I mean, like, that's not based on what they paid Bobby when they paid him. That's not out of the question. I will say I was pleasantly surprised when looking that up that Jack Caglione's numbers were at least that decent. I didn't feel like he had taken some big leap forward. He clearly is walking way more. The thing for Jack Caglione is it's cool to get on base way more. 344. That's a great on base percentage. You're here for a very important task, and that's put the ball over the fence. I want to see, like, that's been maybe the most concerning thing out of all this stuff for him so far. The swing and the miss, all that stuff. No, put the ball over the fence. You're Jack Caglione. Hit homers.
You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game all season long, kicking off with this week 4 matchup between the Ravens and the Chiefs. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL. to get started today. And we will talk some more NFL here in about 12 minutes with former NFL wide receiver Steve Smith. He's got a new podcast out, a show over on YouTube. Want to get his perspective on the Chiefs and obviously the wide receivers and the emergence of Tyquan Thorne. Let's talk a little college football. We mentioned yesterday briefly, of course, we were focused heavily on the Chiefs a day after a game, but Missouri got a massive win against South Carolina to firmly put them on a path, at least, to getting a CFP berth. Kansas, of course, took care of business against West Virginia. I want to start with Missouri, though, because we all acknowledged last week that, all right, you go out and you beat South Carolina, we can start having a real conversation. What would it look like? What's the path? What's needed to get a college football playoff berth? Nobody, you don't have to win the SEC, although if you were wondering, they're 22-1 to do that. Missouri's 3-1 right now on FanDuel to make the college football playoff. It's a real opportunity here, and they still have a couple more home games before they go out on the road. Can they go 3-1? I don't know if you guys agree. Can they go 3-1 in the stretch of games coming up, or at least against some of these
UMass,
opponents.
UMass, that should be a yes. win. Then they have Alabama and Auburn and Vanderbilt.
There you go.
If they go 3-1, then they're...
If they go 3-1, they're making the college football playoff.
Yeah.
No, it is that simple. It is that. Look, they're going to handle UMass this weekend, okay? We don't have to worry about that.
So can they go 2-1 against Alabama, Auburn, and Vanderbilt? That's what you're asking?
No, I think it's 3-1. So three to me, it's
A&M
3-1, including Alabama, Auburn, Vandy, A&M.
If they go 3-1, then they're in. If they go 3-1 in that stretch, then
it doesn't mean there's no.
Then they can lose to Oklahoma, and it doesn't hurt them.
Yes. It doesn't mean there's zero path if they, you know, if they were to not go 3-1. But if you're saying how to like feel pretty good and there's not much of a question out there and much of a debate, you go 3-1. I don't think we're really having much of a question about their path.
The way that because there's a firm line in the sand of 9-3 does not get you in if you don't win your conference title game, because last year South Carolina and Ole Miss barely missed out. They were 9-3. So I think if you go 10-2 and you're in the SEC, you are in.
The only thing that helps you in the 9-3 camp this year is Clemson's awful and Notre Dame got off to a rough start, which means some of those teams that might normally take extra SEC spots, Drew might not.
The problem though is let's say Clemson wins out and they're 9-3 and they play Miami in the ACC
Clemson
title
is no
game.
Business. Now,
hang on.
Out.
If they go 9-3, if they went out and they go 9-3 and then they beat Miami, who's, let's say, undefeated, but then they lose in the conference title game, Miami steals one of those spots that Missouri would have. So if you're a 10-2 Missouri that doesn't make it to the conference title game, then you want it to basically be chalk. You want it to be chalk.
Right.
In the conference titles. Otherwise, we talk about berths being stolen and all the other stuff for at-large.
Can you imagine the conversation somehow if Missouri was 9-3, okay? And then Notre Dame, the scenario that you brought up happens, Cody.
10-2.
And they went out?
And they win. They're 10-2. That's the debate all of a sudden.
Yes.
The irony, though, in that would be, didn't the SEC this past offseason spend all like, oh, we got to weigh strength of schedule way more and all this, and it's going to come back to bite them in the ass if that scenario happened, because it'll actually benefit Notre Dame in that scenario, not an SEC school, even though Missouri's schedule is tougher than people give it credit for.
I think the only... What would happen in that argument if Notre Dame actually made it in was if A&M is in the SEC title game and Miami wins the ACC, even though Notre Dame would have lost those two games, it would be really hard to not include them, because the two losses were by a combined four points to two teams that are inside.
I know.
But it's always the same thing. It's the way that college sports go, though, because there's no guarantee. There's no lock form. This is who's in. Sure. This is who's out. This is how you get in. This is how you don't, sort of thing. It's just the way that college sports kind of go. And is it unfair sometimes? Hunter, it's been unfair for the entirety of their existence, essentially. There seems to share national titles in college football still.
I genuinely think, and this will help Missouri too, I think that Kansas one's going to look better and better. Kansas.
True. Missouri should want Kansas to keep winning.
Kansas
is not just winning. Kansas has absolutely taken it to everybody on their schedule besides Missouri. Missouri, a top 15 talented team, they went toe-to-toe with for three full quarters. On the road, toe-to-toe with. So, they put up their own fight. I fully expect Kansas to kick Cincinnati and UCF's ass.
They should win those games.
The big one is obviously late in the year, Iowa State, and then coming up in the middle of October,
right?
Texas Tech. But no, Cincinnati, UCF, those should be games you absolutely win if you're Kansas. And then a huge test on the road against Tech, who, they paid
Tech
for that roster,
really,
and
really
they're getting their bang for their buck right now, it looks like. And then obviously the Sunflower Showdown. We've already said it. I mean, there's no excuse. This year, you have to be Kansas State.
Rivalry games are weird, but yes,
you have to win this one.
If you're Kansas, you should win that football
game. They haven't beaten K-State.
I know.
I know.
Since,
have
Reagan
to win this
season.
It's been a very long time.
They're bad. You're good. Yep. You're at home. They're on the road.
Rivalry games are weird.
If you can't win this one,
I know,
they're just going to hold it over your head for the rest of time.
Got to win it this year.
We talk about this all the time. This is your opportunity. For the Chargers, this is your opportunity to win the AFC West. Don't let it slip through your fingers. You're 3-0. They're 1-2. They got the Ravens. You got the Giants. You better get, for Kansas, it's you got to get Kansas State this year. I thought Missouri was going to be very good. I've been blown away by how good Hardy is.
Well, Hardy, and then they've gotten much better quarterback play than any of us. It was a question mark.
Bo Perbula's been really, really good.
The transfer Hardy's been awesome. I mean, flat out awesome. But I think the biggest thing is they're getting better quarterback play than a lot of us thought they were going
to
get.
For them to lose, because I know Kevin Coleman Jr. has done great as well, but for them to lose Luther Burden and Theo Weiss and to not miss a beat and even be better, is it goes to show you how much better Bo Perbula, but how good he actually is, I think.
That's the story on both locals, man. Jalen Daniels been great, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, up next, let's talk some NFL with former NFL wide receiver Steve Smith. Want to get his perspective on this Chiefs offense, and also what could Xavier Worthy bring to the table with from what he's seen. That's coming up right here on Cody and Gold.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.